HRHeadquarters.ie, the podcast.
Okay, so today I am joined by Laura Powney from HR for Better Workplaces. Laura, you're very welcome to the podcast. How are you?
I'm good, and thanks for having me.
Good stuff. Why don't you tell us about yourself, Laura, what your role is for HR for Better Workplaces, and indeed what HR for Better Workplaces do.
Okay, so my role is Principal HR and Employment Law Consultant for the company. Well, hopefully the clue is in the name of what we do. So we're called HR for Better Workplaces, and we really try to do what it says in the name. We try to use our knowledge in HR and experience over many years to make better workplaces for the clients that we work with. So we try to use HR and our employment law knowledge to achieve that goal with our clients. And that's primarily what we're here to do. And really a big part of that, I suppose, forms the well-being arm of the business. That's primarily what we do.
Well-being, such a hot topic at the moment. I think I am almost a year to the day working mm-hmm. from home. With that well-being lens on it, what's been the effect of nearly a year in lockdown on workplaces, or what's your observations?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first thing to say in line with that is that we are, as you say, a year down the line, and things look very different today than they did at the start of COVID. And I think that's the biggest thing that we have to keep in mind when we're talking about wellbeing initiatives, programs, or anything to do in that space. As you say, wellbeing is such a hot topic at the moment, but we have been working in wellbeing for many years, always realizing that it forms such an important part in the business in terms of HR. Every single thing that you do, obviously the wellbeing of employees has an impact on your business. So really, in terms of COVID, what we have seen is a very change in space in wellbeing. And really what I suppose employees need it in the beginning, they probably still need some of those things, but those things have changed. But that's really an important part to say about wellbeing in general. Wellbeing in general is a journey. So when we start any wellbeing programs or initiatives or try to do anything like that in your business, really we have to be aware that it's a space that changes continually, and we need to always be looking at that along the journey. And COVID is no different in terms of wellbeing. So we have seen, I suppose, in the beginning, we've seen a lot of more practical things that needed to be done to help employees, work from home, to help employees, get set up to be able to cope with working from home, provide some supports in terms of, managing their circumstances when working from home, because it was very different than normal working from home pre the pandemic. We did a lot of things like trying to advise our clients in terms of, make sure your employees don't become isolated. So we would have said, get teleconferencing, the likes of Zoom or Teams and things, stay connected to your teams. That was really good because we wanted to really make sure that you could see your employees, because it's really important that we can spot things in terms of wellbeing when we can see employees, we can have conversations. Because it's very hard to spot things when you're not actually physically seeing someone. So we were advising all of these things. I would say that area has slightly changed now in terms of everyone really got on board with that. We were Zooming, we were Microsoft Teaming, we were webinaring, we were doing all of those things to stay connected. But perhaps I would say I see a bit now of perhaps an overuse of those things, which is actually having some kind of effect on the other way. So maybe, too much screen time, sometimes we're using Zoom and, you know, teleconferencing a little bit too much, maybe when it's not needed. So we're increasing screen time for employees. We're increasing maybe some type of stress because, you know, it's not a natural setting all of the time to be on Zoom constantly and to be on, you know, I keep saying Zoom, but, you know, Microsoft Teams, all of those ones that are available.
It's become a verb, hasn't it now?
Exactly. We're, you know, there's so many words have kind of organically come out of COVID in that way. We're Zooming, we're webinaring, you know, so many things that, yes, we had started to use before, but now they're just commonplace every day. And I think that we have to be mindful, you know, that we have to be mindful of the use of those things now. So that's one thing. I think a very, very big thing that we have seen a major difference in is that when we first embarked on lockdown and living very restricted lives to what we did before in terms of the pandemic, you know, we were looking at something that we didn't know what we were going into. So there was a type of, yes, everyone was worried and there was a lot of devastation in workplaces. You know, I'm not diminishing layoff, redundancies, business closure, all of those things, which were devastating. But there was also the other side where, you know, people were working from home for the first time. People were maybe working from home more than they used to. Maybe they had a day a week previous and this was kind of exciting. It was kind of new. So there was all of these new things that were happening. We were Zooming, we were webinaring, we were doing things that we didn't do before. And I think that in some way distracted us slightly. And also we didn't know how long it was going to last, which was, that's a major, major part of the wellbeing journey that we're seeing now, that actually the lockdown that we're currently going through and the restrictive living that we're going through now and the working from home and all of those things that transpired from when the pandemic began is very different. We are a year into this. It's not new anymore. There's nothing really to distract us. We didn't have sunshine. You know, we are definitely feeling different in this lockdown. And I've seen a lot of increase in stress. I must definitely mention that because it's so important. And I think the biggest challenge we're going to have between now and hopefully when we see the end of lockdown and COVID is the management of that stress ongoing and immediately when we return to a more normal workplace.
What can companies start to do, Laura, to put them in a better position? You know, it as you said there, it's difficult sometimes. You could be managing a remote team or you could be, you know, you mightn't just be sure of your colleagues and maybe there's less screen time now as well, which I do agree with. What can organizations do practically to help with that journey to ensure a minimization, I guess, of stress?
Yeah, I suppose we have been working with our clients to do many things over the past year in terms of this. And I think the biggest piece of advice that I could give is to say, kind of what I said at the beginning, is to realize that this is a continually changing journey and needs change the whole way through this. So if we are to look after employee wellbeing, we really need to realize that what employees needed 3 months ago, they maybe need something different now. And I don't mean to scare you know, anyone by saying that in terms of, you know, you need to sit at your desk every day and continually analyze this. These things happen organically and you'll see them happening if you have a mind to look at these things. You will see them changing. You will see, and I think the biggest thing to say is we did a survey back in October and we just took a bit of a snapshot of how employees were feeling in terms of the impact of COVID. And really 40%, and this is back in October, so, you know, we've had a long lockdown in very bad, dark weather. So at that stage, though, when we took the snapshot, there was 40% of the workforce that we surveyed were saying, you know, we have been, or our work-related wellbeing has been affected by COVID. And that was back in October. And I have seen a major change since our last lockdown, which, you know, I would be of the belief if we took that snapshot again, those numbers might be worse. So I think that part of that, when we took that survey, part of that was that before, employees were saying, well, my manager used to talk to me. I used to have lots of talks with my manager. I used to have feedback. And really, in the survey, it was 65% of employees were saying that that had decreased during the pandemic. I mean, we would be looking to say that the message would be totally the reverse of that.
Yeah.
You need to speak to your employees now more than ever. Even if it's a 10-minute chat every Friday, every Monday morning, like these don't have to be your, I mean, it's important to say that performance management and those types of things are so important in wellbeing, because this is what helps employees to feel valued, feel listened to, and feel like they have a say in their role if they're done within the right way. But really, in terms of the pandemic and wellbeing, because we know everyone's work and lives have changed, if you don't have time to do your usual performance management system, then that's fine. You know, you can try and do it as much as you can. But the important thing is, you need to continually talk to your employees, be it performance, be it a 10-minute chat to say, are you okay? How are you doing? Anything I can help with? You know, just those few questions to employee, maybe feeling isolated, maybe feeling like they don't like working from home. They don't know how to work from home. They want to be back in the office. They don't know if they're performing okay. Those few questions every week or even every few weeks can mean a lot to an employee. And I think that that's a really important message in terms of wellbeing during the pandemic.
Yeah, I was just about to ask you what are some of the practical things, you know, leaders can do. So that sounds like number one, make sure you have those sort of regular catch-ups with individuals. Is there anything else out there you're seeing either by individual leaders or companies doing that you either have advised on or have just observed and thought, oh yeah, that's, I like that, or that, or that's a good idea?
Yeah, there's a few practical things that really we have done a lot of, and we've seen companies do a lot of over the past year. And we act, I mean, this could be a topic of conversation on its own, but there is a EAP service, which is an employee assistance program, for those of you who might not have heard of it.
Yeah.
These are so beneficial right now. And we have been advising our clients, really, if you don't have one, or you used to have one and you didn't really use it very much, and you kind of, you know, kind of stop talking about it to your employees, it's definitely time to bring those things out again or sign up to one. They are so beneficial. There is so much stress in the workplace right now. And I'm not saying all of that stress comes from the workplace, by the way. I'm saying that, you know, we have never lived three times like this before. We have never experienced all these things that are happening right now, maybe at home and in a combination of work. So it's really important that employees feel they have somewhere to go. And although that we can, as managers and owners of businesses, perhaps help with a lot of these things, sometimes there's things that employees need somewhere else to go. And the employee assistance program actually offers a service where your employees can confidentially call someone and talk about these things without having to fear that, you know, it's something they have to have added stress about. Oh, I need to talk to my manager about this, or maybe they feel uncomfortable to do so, and maybe they feel that it's not the right forum to bring it up because it's maybe something that's affecting them at home rather than work. This is something that really supports employees in terms of more, I suppose, a mental health space, stroke stress, stroke workplace wellbeing. So it kind of wraps a few categories into one by having this. And I think it's really, really something that I would advise businesses to look at if they think that it's something that they could implement into their business. It's a lot of our clients have actually found this really beneficial during COVID.
Yeah, I think that's a really good call. I mean, no organization can be expected to have in-house, you know, maybe counselors or whatever it might be. So it just allows you access to that sort of stuff. And there's loads of great other stuff as well. You know, I know some of the EAP services do financial well-being and all of those other types of things. So it's
I mean, I think, you know, any of the businesses and that we have seen doing really well in this space is as you say, you're talking about financial wellness. I think the biggest thing to realize is that well-being isn't just mental health. It's not just stress in terms of things that are happening to us in work. It encompasses so much more than that. It can be financial wellness. You know, people can be worried about money. People can be worried about, especially during COVID, if their job has been affected, maybe temporarily or long term. These things can all, you know, these things are all brought to work when you sit down in the morning and you open up your laptop or wherever you're working at the moment. These are things that employees are thinking about. And I think businesses that recognize that it's bigger than just the one thing and it encompasses so much more, I think those are the companies that definitely succeed more in this space. I think that to realize that it's continually changing. Also as well, I mean, I have an important thing to say in terms of really how we look at wellbeing initiatives in companies. So I used to hear, like, obviously we work a lot in this space, and I used to hear a lot of things like, we did wellbeing last year, that's done now. Or we did wellbeing, or we tried wellbeing, didn't work for us. You know,
today.
Yeah, these things are just the things that, you know, wellbeing is a continual journey. It's not a one-time event. It's not, I did yoga at lunchtime last Friday with my employees. That's wellbeing ticked for the year. And I'm not saying that yoga and Pilates and all mindfulness, meditation, all of those things have a place, but they have a place along with other things. They have a place at a certain time as well. We actually, a few years back, designed a wellbeing audit. And the reason that we did that was because we were having, excuse me, clients that were asking us for the things I just mentioned, wellbeing, yoga, you know, and the reason that these were being asked for was that it came from a good place. They thought it was going to help their employees. They thought it was what their employees would like to see. They saw other, maybe more global and multinational companies doing these things. And they thought it was the right place to go. And it was a very progressive move. And I'm not saying that it isn't. But what I am saying is that we were given these things to companies. And we were like, yeah, here's your, you know, 6 weeks of yoga for your employees and things like that. Excuse me. But it wasn't really always working. And what we had to realize was actually no one has asked the employees if they wanted it. No one has asked the employees what they want. And really, I suppose it had the opposite effect of the companies were trying to do something really nice for their employees, really look for their well-being. And actually, employees were feeling forced to do something they didn't want to do. And that's why I'm saying that, yes, yoga, Pilates, all of those things certainly have a space. Those things are amazing for our well-being and our mental health. But it's when we implement them, how we implement them, and if it's something that employees want to get on board with. Mm. It's really important to consider all those things. So when we did the audit, we did like a survey of how employees were feeling in the well-being space. And we took some direction from them, from the survey results, as to what they would like to see and what the burning issues were in terms of their well-being in the workplace at the time. And in most of those that we did, it was always usually something different came out on top than what the employer might have been thinking. So I think we always firstly think they're going to want more money, or they're going to want, you know, something that we can't give them. And actually, a lot of the things were very much communication. I want my manager to talk to me. I want to feel valued. I want to feel appreciated. You know, it was more of these things that were coming to the surface than, and financial wellness actually is, as you mentioned earlier, Declan, was something that fared quite high as well. You know, so it was more than just, I want more money. And usually, you know, it's never usually that, to be honest. I think that it's, that's seen aside from well-being as well, and that's a different conversation mostly. But when we talk in terms of well-being, it's really more how the employee is feeling, and how we can help them to feel better when they walk through the door in the morning, or at the moment we're not walking through the door, but
the virtual door. Sorry, I was just going to ask you, Laura, it's interesting, something you touched on there was just, you know, well-being initiatives. And as you said, some of them have their places, and if they're well-researched, you might be giving the employees what they want.
Yeah.
How do companies actually make well-being a continual thing? You know, so it's not a well-being day or a well-being week, or, you know, those one-off events. How do you embed it in your organization?
I think that the biggest thing to realize is that, well-being should be forming part of your company culture. So it really comes down to behaviors in your business. So we need to really take a step back and say, this comes from the top. Okay. So well-being, as a continual journey and something that is embedded in the fabric of your business, doesn't work unless it feeds from the top down. So everyone needs to be involved. And that's the biggest message that I can really give in terms of that. If well-being is to really change within your business, it has to form part of your culture. It has to form behaviors in everyone in the business. So they need to, we need to make sure that everyone is displaying and living by those certain behaviors so that we can achieve well-being. And I think, to go back to my, I suppose, piece of advice I gave before, and it's to continually talk to your employees, look at your employees, see how they're changing, see how their needs are changing, and then take steps to change along with them. And these things can be, you know, recognized quite easily if you are looking out for them. I think the danger is when we stop looking out for these things, that's when the well-being journey changes, and it no longer feels to employees that you're engaged with it anymore. Yeah, so in terms of well-being, employees are your source of information. So I think that instead of trying to go other places and look for the information to say, what can I do in my company tomorrow that will fix well-being or will help well-being, your source of information is right in front of you. And I think that's the biggest piece of advice I can give there, is to look at that, analyze it. I mean, the way I kind of look at it sometimes is that we constantly change our marketing plans when our business changes. So we constantly change our budgets and accounts and all the different departments we have in the business. But your employees change just like those departments. And we need to keep changing and doing different things to make sure we get the best out of our employees. I mean, because we can't forget that if we have our well-being in a good place in your company, it helps with company retention, it helps to attract better talent, it improves productivity, it reduces absenteeism. All of these things have really good results and really good benefits to be had from the employer perspective as well. So it's really, really important that we get these right. you know, and that goes back to what I said earlier too, when someone says, well, we tried wellbeing and it didn't work for us. You know, you wouldn't say that about marketing. You wouldn't say that about accounts. You wouldn't say that about business development. You would try something different. You would try something new, and you would try something that suited more to the set of circumstances that exist at the time. And wellbeing of your employees is exactly the same.
So a more dynamic approach needed.
I think
sure.
So. Yeah, and I think the biggest thing is to see it as a journey, not as a tick box exercise. That is so important in terms of the wellbeing space. Really, really important.
Couldn't agree more. Yeah. I have a bit of a phobia for these one-off initiatives. All right. Last question for you, Laura. What do you think is next in this wellbeing space? Do you think is there anything changing? What do you see on the horizon?
I think that I hope that we will see a rise in awareness. And we definitely have over the last few years anyway. But I think that if we can take one positive thing from COVID, is that awareness in this space should be so increased in terms of what we've seen during COVID. I think that wellbeing has been brought to the forefront, and I hope to see it staying there, because that will be so good in terms of when we do go back to some form of normality, that employers see that as such an important aspect of their business. And really, from a practical sense, I suppose what's next is that we need to look at what we need to do post-COVID in terms of wellbeing, because we need to realise that employees will be coming back into the workplace having experienced a very surreal year and a half, 2 years, whatever it may be. They may have experienced loss in terms of, they may have lost a loved one. They may have been sick themselves. They may have looked after someone who was sick. You know, they may have, you know, had their financial position changed. They may have had somebody in their household who lost a job. They will have the effects of maybe isolation, all of these things that are going to come back into the workplace. And we need to be ready to combat these in some practical way, so that, you know, employees are managed in the best way possible when we do return from this.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think there's an interesting thing coming where some organizations are going to want people back in the office, at least to some extent. Yeah. And I think there's going to be a lot of people who won't see a reason to go back and do that commute and just to do the same work in a different location. Yeah. So I think that one's on the horizon for sure as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's about managing, you know, remote working and maybe a blend of remote working and getting all. And really important in that space is that we would start thinking about how we would manage these things now, rather than thinking about it after employees actually return into the workplace, because that's obviously going to have the opposite effect. And I think if we have some contingency plans now, that will be a lot more seamless. I do think that we also have to realise that when we're doing up those plans, that working from home is very different now than it was pre-COVID, and it will be after COVID, because at the moment we're forced to be here working from home. You know, there's no opportunity to break that up in any way, even if you wanted to. We're working in different circumstances, in that we maybe have children at home when we wouldn't usually. You know, we maybe have a partner, a husband, flatmates, whatever that may be, here when you're working at home. And those circumstances might not exist after COVID. So working from home after COVID will be very different as well for a lot of people. So I think that we really have to look at working from home and COVID in a different way as well. We have to kind of say, I think a lot of people will still want to continue it, but I do think through this, people have missed the human aspect of being at work, the chat at the water cooler, the chat 5 minutes before a meeting starts. You know, it's very important to say that when we're doing teleconference meetings and things like that at the minute, there's no, and I've been actually saying this to my clients, when you're having these meetings on whatever platform, you're having them, have a little icebreaker at the start, because you kind of do that naturally when you're in the workplace. You're waiting for people to arrive at the meeting and you're having a little chat about what you had for dinner last night, or a new recipe you tried, or about your kids, or, you know, whatever, your holiday plans. I don't know, none of us really have those right now, but, you know, you're talking about day-to-day things. You're having these little conversations that actually give you a little bit of headspace from work. And it might be a little bit uncomfortable the first time you might do something like that over Zoom, but I have kind of found that we have got so used to logging in to these meetings over COVID, and it's straight into business. And if the Zoom meeting or your Teams meeting is at 11 and someone isn't on the call at 11:01 or 11:02, I wonder, did they get the invite? I wonder, and people aren't talking to people while they're waiting for people to log on. They're like, I wonder, did they get the invite, and things like that. But we wouldn't ordinarily work like that or think like that if we were sitting in the meeting room. We would be, oh, you know, Jenny will be here in 5 minutes and we'll just have a chat until she arrives. And so I think it's about realizing that, you know, those things are missing from the workplace at the minute, and people will need that human aspect when they return. But there are small things like that we can do now to try and bridge that gap until we do return in a more normal way.
Yeah, excellent. I think we will leave it where we started it with the benefits of good communication in the workplace. Laura, thanks for joining us today. If people want to get in contact with you, what's the best way to do so?
Obviously our website, which is hrforbetterworkplaces.ie, and we have a chat box there. We have a message platform where you can email us through to our info account, and LinkedIn. All the usual social media platforms, we're all there. Yeah, any questions at all or anything we can help with, definitely drop us a message and we'll be happy to help.
Brilliant. And all of that will be, as always, linked below the podcast. Laura, thanks a million.
Great, Eglin. Thanks for having me. Have a lovely day.
HRHeadquarters.ie, the podcast.